Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. Today, we're diving into a topic that affects nearly all of us to some degree, anxiety. Feeling stressed out and anxious is at an all-time high, and today you're going to learn how to get out of this endless spiral. Joining us is Dr. Martha Beck, author of the groundbreaking New York Times bestseller, Beyond Anxiety. She's going to share how you can transform anxiety from a crippling force into a catalyst for peace, meaning, and joy. You'll learn actionable steps that really can help you overcome anxiety and unlock problem solving and achieve deeper connections. And if you're just sick and tired of feeling stressed out and anxious, take a deep breath, relax, and stay tuned because Dr. Beck is in the house and it all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is one of the world's leading experts on personal exploration and development. With three Harvard degrees in social science, she blends transformative teachings with research, spirituality, and humor. Her previous books, including Finding Your Own North Star and The Way of Integrity, have become New York Times and international bestsellers. Her engaging talks have captivated audiences worldwide, and she's been featured on many TV shows, including Oprah Winfrey, Today, and Good Morning America. She's been called the best-known life coach in America by USA Today and NPR. In addition, she's been published in over 150 magazine articles and hosts two podcasts. Her latest book is called Beyond Anxiety, Curiosity, Creativity, and Finding Your Life's Purpose. Welcome to the show, Dr. Martha Beck.
Wow, thank you. I'm so honored to be here. That was quite the introduction.
I had to abbreviate it. Like, where do I bring it down to there? But yeah, I'm a big fan of your work. It's so great to have you join us. And as I was saying, you know, it's such a common topic we all endure to different levels, but chronic anxiety isn't just a state of mind. It really leads to many chronic diseases and a shortened lifespan. I've read about how it shortens your lifespan. Share with us, why is anxiety so high?
Well, one reason it's so high is that the human brain is sort of preferentially steered toward anxiety. The brain has something called a negativity bias, which I refer to as the 15 puppies and a cobra effect. If you walk into a room with 15 puppies and one cobra, all your attention will go to the snake, right?
Right.
And that helps you survive. The problem with humans, unlike other animals, is that when the snake is gone, the other animals, the puppies, they're going to relax. But a human can retell the story of, oh, there could be a snake anywhere. And most of the stuff that we worry about, think about this, we worry about when we're safe and dry and warm, often in bed at night. So we're afraid of things that are only present in the mind, and only humans can do this, and it gets us stuck in this spiraling anxiety. And what we don't know is that that's only half of our brain. On the other half of our brain are creativity, curiosity, connection, and a way to solve the actual problems we face. So the challenge is to get out of that anxiety spiral and get into what I call the creativity spiral on the opposite side of the brain.
So you talk about that creativity spiral in the book. Is it an antidote to anxiety? Could you explain how creativity can really serve as a tool for transforming someone's mental and emotional landscapes?
Sure. I mean, I knew for a long time I'd done work on creativity, and then I started researching anxiety, and I saw that they were kind of mirror images in the brain, neurologically speaking. And there was a lot of research that showed that if we get anxious, our creativity shuts down. And I started to wonder, does that also mean they toggle? If our creativity is up, does our anxiety go down? And I began experimenting. There's not a lot of research on it, but I started to do informal research online and with myself. And I found that by, say, I had a group of 100 people online, I could get them to report their anxiety on a scale from 1 to 10, then do some mental exercises that required creativity, have them put in their anxiety numbers again, and it would be down to 0. And I thought, okay, this works both ways. Anxiety kills creativity, but creativity also kills anxiety. And in creativity, we can face the same difficult situations, but come up with good solutions while remaining calm and healthy.
Yeah, that's great. I'm curious, is there a difference between anxiety and fear?
There really is. Fear is an invaluable survival mechanism, and it's like being shot from a cannon. I interviewed a lot of people who'd been through serious trauma in a car accident. One person was attacked by a crocodile and almost killed. And in every case, what they said was that their whole nervous system went into a state of incredibly alert, calm focus. And they were able to think very fast, know what to do, do it. And then once the danger was passed, boom, the fear disappeared. Real fear is like a fireman that comes in, puts out a fire, and then leaves. But in humans, when we're anxious, it's not like being shot from a cannon. It's like being haunted. It's just this vague, everything's going bad, maybe what could happen, oh no, and it never, ever ends. And it eats our health. It eats our happiness. It takes away our joy. And we don't have to have it.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, I think so many people, the reason maybe we're so anxious is we focus on worst case scenarios. We dwell on potential obstacles that increase stress and anxiety. And I read an interesting study that humans have been hardwired since ancient times to be pessimistic, to be anxious, to operate in that fight or flight mode. How can we shift from this ingrained mindset to a more resilient one, letting like kind of like challenges roll off our back like duck right. water?
Well, the first thing is you and I are talking and chatting and laughing. And we're not in a state of intense anxiety, though I had a very intense bout of anxiety that lasted basically from birth to 60 when I started writing this book. So we've probably both been anxious, but we're not anxious now. But we can remember it. We can talk about it. And that means we're separating ourselves from it to some degree, to a part of us that's not as anxious. And that part, in internal family systems therapy that I refer to in my book, it's called the self with a capital S. And it's what can look at the rest of us and say, oh, I see that I am anxious. I can change that. One of my favorite Indian sages says, the mind is interested in what happens, while awareness is interested in the mind itself. The child is after the toy, but the mother watches the child, not the toy. So as you and I talk about anxiety, we're thinking about our minds when they're like little children gripping a very frightening toy. But we are watching from awareness, which is a different part of the brain, and which can start to pull attention away from the anxiety and put it into creative problem solving that will give us a sense of self-efficacy and competence that is the opposite of anxiety.
Yeah, I love that quote you mentioned. I came across an old proverb many years ago that kind of stuck with me. It was, being anxious often gives a small thing a big shadow. So anxiety can give a small thing a big shadow. And really, anxiety affects everyone differently. What overwhelms one person might be easily manageable for another. Maybe it's a one stress and that guy puts it to a 10. Oh my God, I can't believe it's happening. The other one rolls his eyes. That's nothing. How can individuals gain perspective on their anxiety level to keep things in perspective and keep it from escalating and impacting their mental and physical health?
Well, first of all, don't try to reason your way through this. When you're in a state of anxiety, your brain is a frightened animal, and all the lecturing and talking in the world will not influence, say, a horse or a dog or a bunny rabbit that's absolutely terrified. Language means nothing to it. What does matter to it is physiological conditions. So if you take a very deep breath and let it out, that's what animals do after they've escaped. They don't exhale like that until the danger of a predator is gone. So that right there, it starts to bring down and regulate the nervous system. And then if I said to you, be calm, you can't just make an anxious person calm. You can't make yourself calm. But if I said to you, be kind to the part of you that's anxious. It's like if you found a little miserable kitten on the doorstep and you decided to be calm with it. Every human being is born with an internal knowledge of what to do. We slow down, we drop the pitch, the velocity, and the volume of our voices. We say things, but not rational things, just calming things. I'm okay. You're here. You're okay. I got you. So the first thing you do is breathe. And the second thing is, I call it kind internal self-talk, or KIST for short. You give the same nervous system cues that you would give to calm down a baby or a frightened animal. That brings the brain into calm. Now you can tell it reasonable things like, look, the danger's not in this room. And it will actually sink in once that terrific surge of adrenaline and cortisol has calmed down a bit. now you can start gently moving your attention to the fact that you're okay in this moment, and then grow that into curiosity, creativity, and joy.
Yeah, so true. I read an interesting study because I did a book on laughter and comedy, and the brain doesn't know the difference between a fake smile and a real one. It's been true. I've had stressful days at work, and I'll smile. I walk into the next patient and they, boy, you're in a good mood. Well, I'm not. I'm faking it. But you know what? The next patient, I was in a good mood. I fooled my brain and my chemistry. So it's so true. And that's why, you know, I put on happy music when I'm saying, like, wow, I'm actually singing that happy song in my head. So do you agree that it really isn't? It's a psychological thing as well.
Yes. And it's wonderful that you can do that. You have a deep resource of calm to draw on. You know, your training and everything else gives you that strength and the ability to bring yourself into joyful action. If somebody's so anxious, just that peppy music just makes them hate you. What you start with is like, slow it all down, calm it all down, play some soft music. And the most important thing is, I'm not going to try to make you calm. I'm just going to be here with you. And the moment you say, you have to be calm, people get more anxious. But when you say to yourself, you don't have to be calm, I'm right here, you're safe. Counterintuitively, it's accepting it that starts the change.
Yeah. And something I noticed, I was going to ask you, when I'm feeling kind of down and like, you know, why am I feeling down? And I'll put on some music and it's a song I like. And for hours in my head, I'm singing that music. But I'm wondering, am I saying that doom and gloom news in my head that I just shut the car off and came inside? So I'm like, you know, maybe I'm repeating that negativity. So I've kind of shut off the news and it's never exciting. It's always doom and gloom. Do you agree that people need to start just...
Yes, exactly. Because, okay, so our brains are evolutionarily programmed to give more power to fear than to contentment. And that goes awry in the brain. Our society mirrors that. So in the news business, they say if it bleeds, it leads. Every horrible thing, every plane crash is reported on, but the millions of planes that land safely without crashing, those do not make the news. So we're getting a really disproportionate amount of doom and gloom in our news feed and in our society generally. What you're doing with music is absolutely brilliant, because there are only three times when the right hemisphere, where anxiety does not live, there are only three ways it accesses language, and that is in jokes, poems, and songs. So as you turn off the radio and then move into an appreciation of music and making music, which vibrates your body in ways that calm your nervous system, that music is going to pull you into more of your brain. And now you've got a balanced cognition instead of a tiny little frightened anxiety spiral.
Yeah, so true. And also, it's not just the news. What about social media's role in anxiety? Is it part of the epidemic with the constant drive for likes and follows and stressing over those negative comments? It must take a toll on people's mindset.
Not only does it do that, but we know the brain is plastic, right? It's always moving and shaping. And the algorithms that are out there are designed to replay more of what gets our attention. And they're blind algorithms. They don't know if we're happy or sad. But it turns out we focus more on shocking, horrifying things because of that negativity bias. And if we don't know this is happening, the algorithms feed us more of whatever shocks, horrifies, or outrages us. And there's a really good chance, I'm waiting for the research, but anecdotally, there's a degree of certainty that we are rewiring our brains to be more horrified, more anxious, and it's interacting with the internet in a way that has profoundly and rapidly shifted the way people act toward each other and society in general. It's enough to make you anxious if you didn't know how to get out of it.
Yeah, so true. I remember when Facebook and Instagram had that glitch and they went offline for a day, and so many people were happy because they got to enjoy life, you know, without their faces in front of their phones and tablets, myself included. I'm like, why am I happy? Because I don't have to go check and, you know, I'm an author, I'm a podcast, I have to stay involved in social media. But it was such a wonderful brain vacation. I loved it.
It's highly biased. And there's been at least one case in Myanmar where there was a genocide, where people got fired up over Facebook and were using Facebook to encourage violence. And the only time the brutality, the killing stopped is when they lost power and couldn't go on Facebook. There's a book called The Chaos Machine by Max Fischer that I think should be required reading. It's terrifying. Once you know the way your brain is being shaped. Again, now you're back. You're not the child ripping the toy. You're the mother watching the child and saying, oh, look how the brain, my brain, other brains are being shaped by social media. What will I choose given that I now know what's going on?
Yeah, so true. I love how you also emphasize the importance of having a sense of purpose. And one of my most memorable interviews was with William Shatner, who even in his 90s, he's happier and more productive than many people half his age. And when I asked for a secret, like, what's your secret? He said, it all comes down to having a purpose. He stays engaged by supporting charities and planning events months in advance. And his response kind of stuck with me. He said, I can't die. People are counting on me.
Yes.
Wow. Could you share how cultivating a deeper sense of purpose can help reduce her anxiety?
Well, the moment you move into creativity, which you can do just to get a rest from your anxiety, the right hemisphere of your brain makes connections that have never been made before. And as you're using your whole brain, which in anxiety, you're only using about half the brain. When your whole brain is online, you're seeing all the problems in the world, but you're in a state of creativity. And that's what William Shatner seems to be in. He's always saying, what can I make? There's a big difference between what'll we do? What'll I do? And what can I make? Given this, could I make, and anything we make triggers the creativity in our brains, in our lives. So you don't have to be an artist. You could make a sandwich. You could make a garden. You could make a dinner party with friends. And anything that you do that causes that part of the brain to move starts to put together more and more exciting things. And it naturally gravitates toward its highest sense of meaning, delight, and purpose. And then you find out that there's a need for that in the world. And as Frederick Buechner once said, your mission in life is where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. And that's a really fun place to live.
Yeah, that is great. I know, like for my mom, you know, she's in her 80s and she has to have something to look forward to. She has to have a trip. And if she does, and she's happy. If she doesn't, she's like, God, that gives her that wake up tomorrow. Oh, I got this to look forward to. And I think a lot of people, when we get older, we lose that, especially if you retire and you do nothing. I mean, they end up dying quickly. I know my grandma did. She loved what she did. She was passionate, but she didn't have anything to look forward to. So that's so interesting. Let me ask you this. Something common I hear on this show is the gut-brain axis is a major focus on stress, anxiety, immunity, and disease. We describe bad news, gut-wrenching bad news, and we're advised to trust our gut when we make tough decisions. What are your views on the role of the gut related to anxiety?
Well, I'm a big fan of so-called polyvagal theory, which is a psychological theory about the way our nervous system developed. And it talks about there's a central location that evolved very, very early in creatures that were basically just eating machines. You know, they ate, they pooped, and that was about it. And that is in the gut. Then in the heart region, there are nerves connected to the limbic system that evolved later, and they're about emotionality. And then in our heads and necks, we have very recently developed nervous systems that control things like facial expression and the way we move our heads to communicate. But that gut level, if we receive really, really bad news, what happens is the top layers of the polyvagal system give up and we have what's called a dorsal collapse. So it's like or a tonic collapse, where it's that feeling of just falling through the floor or your stomach dropping. And you may find that you have no energy, have to lie down, have no enthusiasm, everything looks bleak. And one of the most interesting things about that is you kind of need to go through the fight or flight response to climb back up into your brain where you can start to be happy again. So when people are in a total flat out can't move thing, I first tell them, take really good care of yourself and don't try to get up. And then start to think about, there are things that I do not agree with about this world, and I am going to think of something to change that. And it sort of activates the take action, which is higher up in the nervous system. And then you can start to think with your brilliant human brain about solutions to problems that you face, that your friends face, and that society as a whole is facing. And you'll find that your gut feels much better.
Yeah, that's good advice. And I can relate to that gut-brain connection after being exposed to contaminated water here in my city. I had severe colitis. And let me tell you, it affected my memory, my personality, caused persistent anxiety. It's like that fear, you know, the cop pulls behind you and you get that feeling like, oh my God, or you get that call, I got some bad news, your spouse was in the hospital. As soon as you hear bad, it's like, I had that 24/7. And so it was so eye-opening to realize that issues we associate with the brain are actually connected to the gut. Yeah. It really is.
And that happened to me. I was traveling abroad and I got a salad in a hotel room service. And I thought, this is a healthy meal. I took two bites and my entire body said, don't eat that. Because I'm used to tuning into my body. Well, I said, but I overwrote it. It's good. It's healthy. It's fresh food. I'm going to eat it. And I got a parasite and had all the effects you're talking about for a month. But the most interesting thing about it was my body told me something was wrong. And that is the delicacy and intricacy of our nervous system when it's regulated and we're paying attention to it. Anxiety overrides that. But if we're in a state of peace, we feel the signals very early and we can get the solutions more easily.
Yeah, so true. Speaking of, what's your views on food and how it affects anxiety? Is there certain foods that you found that, well, these people are stressed and anxious, here's what they're eating, or maybe they're eating more of? Because have you studied like how food plays a role in, I guess, anxiety medicine?
I have. I certainly am no expert on it, but one thing I can tell you for sure is that there's no example in nature of a creature that evolved to eat a pound of refined sugar every day. That will cause your blood sugar to go all wonky, your insulin levels, cortisol starts to act weird. So the amount of refined sugar that we have, again, we evolved a preference for sweet things, but it's gotten out of all control in most people's diet. And I cut it all out after a while of doing this research.
You know, it's funny. I interview so many experts and doctors and authors, and they disagree. Oh, you got to do paleo. No, you got to do vegan. But the one thing they agree on is sugar is really the source of disease. Everyone agrees that's bad stuff. Public enemy number one. So just throw that in with the anxiety train as well, which makes sense. You know, we talk about anxiety, like cholesterol gets a bad rap, but it has its positive points. It's
right.
Makes our brain
good cholesterol.
There's good. How about anxiety? It gets a bad rap. It isn't all bad. Is there a little anxiety? Can it be life enhancing? Can it be beneficial?
I think fear is very life enhancing with its clarity and its direct way of going, here's what you should do next. But the way you know it's unhealthy is that when danger passes, the fearful feeling stays. And I've had people say to me, well, I need my anxiety to motivate me. But once we got rid of their anxiety, they were 10 times more motivated and creative and productive. So I really believe that we should live without anxiety. We have our fear instinct. It will take good care of us. But we do not need this thing called anxiety that is dominating so many hundreds of millions of people all over the world.
Yeah, and I live without anxiety, but I'll be honest, it's contagious. When I'm around particular individuals, I often feel anxious myself after they leave. How can people avoid absorbing that like energy attract like energy phenomenon?
Well, there's something called entrainment, where if you put a bunch of grandfather clocks in a room, all their pendulums would be swinging differently. But within a few days, they'd all be in perfect synchrony because things that have oscillation tend to synchronize. Well, our brains and hearts and everything have oscillation, and we entrain each other. One of the things I used to do was work with horses, because if I'd go in with a horse, the horse would act the way I felt. If I went in anxious, the horse would get anxious. If I went in calm, the horse would get calm. And it taught me how to be with people. Instead of walking in among people and waiting for someone to make me feel calm, I would make myself calm and then go in among people and hold my state of calm until, if somebody was going to entrain somebody else, I was offering a calm frequency that could bring other people into a state of peace. And that is a conscious, deliberate skill. And the more we practice it, the more our brains wire for calm.
Yeah, I love that you said that, because I'll walk in, I'll see a patient. I know they're stressed. I know they're anxious. And as soon as their mouth opens, it's going to hit me. So I'll bypass it. Say, you look great today or something. That's a great shirt. Or what do you think? It was going to snow this weekend. You can play with the kids. And yeah, my kids are looking forward. Boom, I changed the outlook. It's like now something to look forward to. And I try to do those office spots, but then sometimes it's like, you know, doom and gloom, ab, you know, the Debbie Downer. So it's tough, but I've tried to nip it in the bud. And you know, it's funny. It's like, sometimes I'll get them to be happy and it's like, wow, they didn't complain because I snapped them out of it, which is great. Let me ask you, what about these anti-anxiety supplements? There's so many out there, valerian root, L-theanine, ashwagandha, and of course the latest trend, CBD. I'm curious, do any of these supplements get your seal of approval?
I don't have anything against them. I haven't done my own research on them. I have tried things like CBD oil. I've found that nothing that I have tried lowers my anxiety if my thoughts are driving in an anxious direction. I can think my way into anxiety no matter what's in my system. But I also have the capacity, if I give it some attention, and meditation is like the silver bullet in all the systems that have helped us be healthier, calmer, more mindful. A daily meditation practice for me is the most powerful intervention we can have, but I'm a huge fan of anybody taking whatever their doctors prescribe and seeing what works for them. Like, use everything. You deserve to feel good.
Right. That's so true. And you mentioned meditations. What's your views on affirmations, speaking into the subconscious so it becomes reality? Any validity to that?
There's only one kind of affirmation that ever worked for me, because I would get, if I said, you know, every day in every way, I'm getting better and better, I didn't believe that with the anxious part of myself. And so it would fight back. But if you become the mother watching the child, it's kind of affirmations, but it's this kind internal self-talk, kissed. I just say, hi, how are you feeling? I say to myself, you okay? Oh, you're not okay. Well, tell me all about it. Everything's fine. And I'm in this place of calm receptivity, never trying to force any part of myself to feel any particular way, but open and listening and empathetic with everything. That is incredibly powerful, to empathize from a place of love with every part of you that's not okay, calms your entire system.
So true. And I look at relativities, like, you know, I had a patient complaining yesterday, came in, he had ingrown toenails, he's got to get the surgery, and he's got to travel the next day, and he's complaining. And you ready for this? An hour later, I had a patient come in that lost his leg, amputated leg because he had a bad gangrene. And I'm thinking, man, I wish they were in the same waiting room together, because that guy that's complaining about his ingrown toenail might look, wow, I have it pretty good. You know, there's right. Always somebody worse than you.
And that's, yeah. You make a really interesting point. And once you see the worst, what it does is springboard you into something better. And you can do something to reset your nervous system by just looking around you for all the things that are wonderful. Like, I'm sitting here looking at a computer. Are you kidding? That is like magic. When I was a kid, nobody dreamed of these things. I can get so lost in the admiration of the things I have that I forget to be anxious. And that's a practice I really recommend.
That's so true. One last question. Java is so popular. Coffee, it helps people focus and seems to make them happy, and others, it makes them anxious and jittery. Where do you fall in the Java train? Is it good or bad?
Again, every nervous system is different. I can't tolerate much caffeine at all. It goes straight to anxiety. But I know people who can drink 3 cups in the morning and just feel calm and alert. There is no one fix for something as complex as anxiety, because every one of the billions of us is slightly different. The most important thing is that a calm, loving part of yourself is always watching and saying, oh, I drank 2 cups of coffee. What happened then? I was around this person who's really anxious. What happened? How is it all affecting me? And you become sort of your own research subject, and you begin to learn the patterns that make you anxious and then the patterns that bring you into a state of peace. And you notice that from a state of peace, you can solve all your problems creatively without having to suffer from anxiety.
Yeah. Well said. Kind of like your body told you when you had the second bite of that salad, my body's telling me. And it's the same with coffee. Let your body speak. If you feel really good and you're great all day, it's fine. But if you feel anxious or you're on the toilet because it maybe gives you diarrhea, that might not be for you, because I'm that way. I have to watch out for coffee, but other people just drink 3-4 and they feel good. So let your body speak to you is what you're saying. And I agree with that. Such great information. The last minute or so we have left, is there anything else you'd like to share with our anxious listeners that we didn't cover today?
Just know that you're not alone, and that once you start to find calm, look for people who help calm you down. Like, I have a community online called Wilder Community that is specifically to help people. It's called a sanctuary for the bewildered. Find people that you can go to who are calm and calming, because you don't need to do this alone, and your nervous system was designed to work with other people. We can all heal from this together if we hang together.
I love that. You reminded me, you know, they say opposites attract when it comes to couples. And we have this lady that comes in and she is so nervous and anxious and jittery. And it's like, she's been great patient. She's been coming for a while. Well, she says, I'm going to have my husband come in. He's coming in Friday. And my office manager rolled his eyes. Oh no, another one. It's like, and I said, you watch what's going to happen when he comes in. I bet he comes in. He's the most calm, easygoing guy. And he was the quiet. Yeah. And that's because they've been married for like 30, 40 years because the opposites attract. They feed on each other's opposites. And I think that's so true. I think if you're with an A-type and you're an A-type, it's going to be a little tough because you're both drivers. I think you need that calming side, you know, from what I said. You agree? I mean, it's good to have
opposites. I do agree. And I think pets are probably the best thing that you can do for yourself because an animal does not get thoughts in its head about all the terrible things that are going to happen. It's just present. Your dog puts his head on your lap. Your cat is purring nearby. It recalibrates your nervous system to presence. And that is always a calm place to be.
That's so true. My dog's sitting right here next to me. As you said that, he's looking up. And I'll tell you, what a life-changing experience. I've had the dog for a year and a half. And what a difference, because that dog is happy all the time. The little tiny things that make him happy. Like, you know, it takes us, we need a car, we need this, we need a new home, we need a new cow. And people want the bigger and the better, and they're not happy with what they got. This dog, a tennis ball makes him happy every single day. I mean, excited a month from now than he was today just playing with a tennis ball.
Right.
And it puts a new perspective. It's like, wow, I wish I could just be happy about that every day. The same old, same old. It's so cute. So that's great. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. Such an important topic. And the book is called Beyond Anxiety, Curiosity, Creativity, and Finding Your Life's Purpose. And to get your copy, go to marthabeck.com. And while there, be sure and check out her podcast and learn about her courses, trainings, and retreats. And you can follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at The Martha Beck. And you can follow me on Facebook and X at Dr. David Friedman. On Instagram, I'm at Dr. D. Friedman. If you heard something today that somebody you know that's maybe a little anxious needs to hear, send them a link to this podcast. It's available to yourgoodhealthradio.com and radiomd.com, and peruse our podcast library. And as I always say, share these segments of interest with friends, family, and coworkers, and on social media. A lot of negativity on social media. This is the podcast to throw in the mix. Let's get it more positive. This information is too important to keep to yourself. Sharing is caring. And remember, subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.